Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Jason Powell here with a review of the TNA Impact Wrestling Show. Today is September 24th, 2015. The show aired on September 23rd. It was taped in Orlando, Florida at Universal Studios. And I thought this was a good overall edition of Impact. There was a lot going on as they're trying to do some late hype for the Bound for Glory show, which has kind of been an afterthought with this whole TNA versus Global Force Wrestling three-week war, whatever it was that they ended up having. And now that that is out of the way, they were able to shift the focus to Bound for Glory. I wish they would have spent more time building to this event, you know, really making it feel like the company's biggest show of the year, which it is. And it feels a little late. But the good news on that is I think it's going to lead to some entertaining additions, and last night was no exception. So we only have this week and next week's show to go, and we just found out what our TNA world title match is on Bound for Glory, so they have a lot to get in. I mean, it may feel like an overbooked show next week, but I didn't feel like that was the case with this one. I thought this was one of the better episodes of Impact they've had recently. Josh Matthews and the Pope D'Angelo De Niro on commentary, and they opened up with, they might as well have picked up where they left off last week. I don't know if that's what they did or if this was a different taping. But yeah, Dixie Carter, the Wolves, Lashley, and Bram all in the ring. Members of the TNA roster at ringside, and they're celebrating. Oh, and then Drew Galloway made his entrance, and they were celebrating the fact that TNA ended up winning the Lethal Lockdown match over the Global Force Wrestling team. And with Galloway making his entrance, I assume they didn't just pick up where they left off the week before. But it was a good celebration moment. The fans were receptive to it. I think it made the Global Force Wrestling thing feel probably bigger than it had even when it was happening. And I think it's okay. I mean, there's only so much you can do in 3 weeks. But I like that they didn't just, TNA won the war and everything's back to normal. They had a celebration moment, and they made a big fuss over beating Global Force. And so the whole thing felt rushed, but at the same time, this was pretty well done. They also had Dixie Carter announce that the TNA title will be defended at Bound for Glory against the winner of a five-way match with all of the members of Team TNA. She was rewarding them. Galloway, Lashley, Bram, Davey Richards, Eddie Edwards would face off later in the show to determine that number one contender. And that's logical. You know, she's rewarding the people that stood up for her company. And then she calls out Eric Young. And he joined the Global Force Wrestling team at Lethal Lockdown. And there was a You Sold Out chant at him. And then Dixie talked about how he turned her back on the company. And she started mocking him, or mocking her, I should say. He said that you're going to punish me now. And he asked why she didn't do that when he got rid of Kurt Angle permanently, or when he took Chris Melendez's leg. And Young said it's because he has an ironclad contract. So he's Big Show now. You have Kane being Joseph Park, and now you have Eric Young with being Big Show. And he said he hedged his bet by joining Team Global Force Wrestling. And he said there's nothing Dixie can do about it. And she said, that might be true, but the wrestlers can. And she called out Chris Melendez, who was using crutches because Eric Young has his prosthetic leg, which is still just, like, really TNA. She booked the two of them in a match with all of the wrestlers at ringside, with all, you know, everyone that was supporting TNA would be the Lumberjacks, and they went to a commercial break. Now, the whole ironclad contract thing seems a little, you know, a little too convenient, but that said, I wish they would have established this beforehand, because it actually does make sense from Young's perspective. He has the ironclad contract with TNA, but if Global Force had won, he was, you know, outspoken against the Jeff Jarrett character, and so he might not have a gig there. So if you have an ironclad contract and you have a bad relationship with the other side, you can stay with your company and hope you win, or knowing you have the ironclad contract with that company, you can go try to win one for Global Force Wrestling, and that way you're covered either way. And so I thought, you know, good logic there. I just wish they would have established it a little sooner. Felt like something that was, they made up on the fly or came up with after the fact. Then we went to our first match, though. Oh, and by the way, I do have to add, it did seem odd. You know, the week before when they were doing the Lethal Lockdown match, and the big question was, could TNA find a fifth wrestler? Global Force had five, and because of Eric Young and TNA, they're struggling, Galloway struggling to find that fifth man. And yet all of the TNA crew is out there celebrating this, and it's like, well, where were you guys? You know, so that was a little bit, that was weird. But not as weird as watching two men fight over a prosthetic leg. At least we did not get the leg on a pole match it was Eric Young losing to Chris Melendez. Lumberjacks were at ringside, and yes, they did go after Young a little bit. And then after Melendez performed a, well, one-legged missile dropkick to get the win, he got his leg back, or his leg, I should say, singular, and the babyfaces entered the ring and were all celebrating with him and even hoisted him onto their shoulders. So he gets his leg back. It was pretty tacky all along, pretty silly, but I guess the good guy wins in the end, and hopefully that's the end of it. We got a Dollhouse video, Taryn Terrell asking the others who they think her favorite is among them. And she told Jade that she needs to hurt Gail Kim. And Jade was giddy about this, saying she would. And then she told Marty and Rebel to go out and show her why they should be her favorite. I think the idea is she's kind of picking on Rebel as the newcomer a little bit here. Just I can't remember exactly what it was, but that was the vibe I got. Like, yeah, you're not my favorite, that kind of a thing. So I don't know if it's just going to be some hazing and eventually Rebel is going to leave the group, or if it's just they're trying to give her a little something. I don't know that Dollhouse needed a fourth woman. I don't know how Rebel is going to fit in. And if it is kind of a short-term thing, it's going to be like, so you join the group, but then when you were picked on, now you're a nice girl again. Eh, but we'll see how it goes. Josh Matthews hyped the Gail Kim versus Jade match, and then the TNA title match, and then we went backstage where EC3 was talking with Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Hardy. Jeff Jarrett wasn't on this show. Typo by me in the report. EC3 was wearing a suit, Jeff was wearing the, Hardy was wearing the EC3 suit, and then Tyrus was standing by, and Hardy noted that he would hit Spud when he sees him. Because of EC3's orders, and then he reminded Hardy that he would be fired if he didn't do as he was told. This all stems, for those not keeping up on the show, this stems from the fact that EC3 ended up beating, I think it was Matt Hardy, and the stipulation is that Jeff Hardy has to be his personal assistant for, I think, 30 days or something like that. And so they go to a commercial break, and Bobby Lashley is talking to the anonymous interview guy about defending TNA and then getting that TNA title shot, or at least a shot to get the title shot, I should say. And then we ended up with Gail Kim defeating Jade in 4:25 to retain the Knockouts title. This was a good match. I enjoyed it. It was Gail selling more than what we'd seen her sell in quite some time, because she's been doing this, like, badass character. And so it seemed odd that she was selling so much here. It seemed even stranger, though, that she was selling so much for Jade, because keep in mind, Gail Kim beat Jade and Marty in a steel cage match by herself. I mean, just dominated them. And so it was a little bit odd to see, okay, now it's just Jade and you're struggling this much. But I think they needed to come back to reality with Gail Kim being Superwoman, essentially. And it's especially now that she's going into this program with Awesome Kong, who ended up, the Dollhouse women came out, the other two. Taryn Terrell, I believe, I don't know if she's been medically cleared since, but she wasn't able to do anything physical at part of these tapings because of, I don't know if it diagnosed as concussion, but some sort of a head trauma issue. Hopefully it's nothing serious, and it just was something that kept her out of these the marathon tapings, and she'll be good to go as soon as Bound for Glory. She was not on that last house show loop, so we'll keep an eye on that. But Awesome Kong's music played, and she came out, and Madison Rain and Velvet Sky ran off the Dollhouse women. And then Awesome Kong came out and had a stare down with Gail Kim, and they just cut away from that. So they're setting up, obviously, Kong and Kim. It's been announced for Bound for Glory, a renewal of TNA's greatest knockouts feud. How good can it be in 2015? We'll see. I think Gail Kim is as good as ever. Kong is, people in TNA will tell you, and hopefully something has changed here, that she's just not quite the same because she's had so many, like a back injury, I think is what it is, that's really slowed her down. But she's done some things, early on it was very noticeable, but she's had some better outings since then. So I'm hoping that this can be a good match. I'd hate to see this just be a complete disappointment. Let that be the final image of these two, because for those who remember, that was one hell of a program that they had. Gail Kim and Awesome Kong back in the day really did get the Knockouts division off the ground, made people start paying attention to it, and so hopefully they can go out there and maybe not exceed what they were once able to do, but at least put in a good strong match that will satisfy viewers at Bound for Glory. They went backstage to Rockstar Spud, who was asked about this TNA title match, and he was talking about EC3 and how, the two of them always end up going in a circle. They always end up back facing one another, and he understands why Jeff Hardy had hit him the week before, and it's because he was ordered to by EC3, but he said he wants to be the TNA champion regardless of Hardy's problems. And so they went to a commercial break from that, and so I think the message here was like, yeah, Jeff, I get it last week, but this is a TNA title match. This is a little different. Come on, don't do it again. Second match, you had Tigre Uno beating Kenny King to retain the X Division title in 6 minutes. A good X Division title match, and Kenny King has since shown up in Ring of Honor. So a little bit, I don't know if it... I would say it would be embarrassing for TNA if they had had him beat Tigre Uno here. I don't think it's that big of a deal as long as they didn't, put the title on him before he left, as Ring of Honor did with the tag titles before he went to TNA. Tigre ended up beating him, and this was... it's good. I mean, Tigre, the crowd likes him. I don't think there's a strong connection there yet, and it's going to take some time. And I say for that reason, he doesn't speak English, or if he does, he speaks broken English. And so it may take a little time. Just leave the title on him. I think there's some upside with him. I think the crowd is starting to take to his in-ring performances. I mean, it's not as easy as it was. And when I say easy, I mean, these guys were amazing what they did. But Rey Mysterio and Psicosis could come in and just wow people with all these moves they'd never seen before. Tigre's using a lot of those moves, but people have seen them a million times. But I do think people are warming up to him. I think it would be a mistake at this point to take the title off him, because I think that's what it's going to take, is a good long title reign for people to start respecting this guy. Keep in mind that he was a glorified jobber in TNA for how long until he won this title. So even though the fans aren't, going gaga over him, I would still, give him a good lengthy title reign and see if something clicks. I mean, they should know here in a couple of months whether there's any real momentum. And if there's not, okay, then maybe you derail those plans. But I would at least give him 2-3 more months and kind of see where it's at, get a feel for it, assuming, hopefully TNA is still around in 2-3 more months. They've announced a television taping, a pay-per-view taping, but we're still waiting for them to announce a television taping for something coming out of Bound for Glory. Dixie Carter, of course, in the Sports Illustrated interview, did say that they are on Destination America through the end of the year, negotiating for, 2016 as well. So we will see. Then we went to a video package that aired on the EC3 and Spud feud, and we got a commercial break after the ring entrances. And then the match was EC3 defeating Rockstar Spud in 6 minutes to retain the TNA title. This was, we've seen better from EC3 and Spud. I mean, they work very well together. Spud is like the ultimate underdog. He plays that role so well. He's just such a good talker. What he does in the ring, I mean, the way he can sell for people. I mean, this guy is world class. And EC3 is great at what he does as well. And so, I mean, I've really enjoyed, if there's one feud I would point to, if you're somebody who's been, you moved on from TNA, you didn't have Destination America, maybe now you do, whatever the case may be. If there's a way for you to see EC3 and Spud and their program together, which started with them, Spud basically being Dixie's assistant and just kissing the ass of the Carter family, to EC3 just ruthlessly getting rid of him and shaving his head and doing all these horrible things to him. It's been probably my favorite program in TNA in a long time, if not ever. I think they've done some really good work with these two, and I just love the dynamic there. But this was, the focus isn't on them right now. And so I have no doubt that they could go out there and recapture that magic when the time is right. But the focus is kind of on what Jeff Hardy is doing in this whole situation with EC3. And after the match, well, first, Spud was going for his finisher, but EC3 hit him with a TKO and then followed up with a 1%er. So he got the clean win there. And I think that's important once in a while. As much as I love Spud, Spud can handle a loss. He can bounce right back from it. But I think it's important that EC3 wins clean sometimes, and he doesn't become Seth Rollins, where he's just losing or winning matches because of outside interference constantly. You need to have those credibility-boosting wins as well without all the outside interference. After the match, though, EC3 had Tyrus hit Spud with a heart punch and then ordered Jeff Hardy to end Spud's career with a twist of fate, I think he said. I'm like, that's Doesn't end careers, but anyway, Hardy took his jacket off, which has EC3's picture all over it, and then Tyrus was holding Spud, but Hardy said no, and EC3 said he could do better than firing Hardy. He said he and Tyrus could end his career. Matt Hardy ran out to help. Tyrus roughed him up. EC3 told Jeff to hit Matt, who was being held from behind by Tyrus. Matt kicked Tyrus low, I believe it was, to break free, and then Jeff punched EC3, and then went to a commercial break. It's a little odd that Jeff can't fight for himself, but I think as good as I really like the broadcast team now of Josh Matthews and the Pope, D'Angelo De Niro. The Pope is kind of out there sometimes, but he's well spoken, and you know he's good as a color commentator. When he sinks his teeth into something, I think he can do some good work. Josh Matthews, I think, has really come along. It's nice to hear him outside WWE, where you're just so restricted. And I think Josh does really good work for TNA, and they're starting to gel now as a broadcast team. But I thought in this case, it would have been, and maybe I missed it. I do tend to zone out the announcers unintentionally sometimes. But I didn't hear much explanation for, hey, Jeff, his leg is broken. He's just starting to recover from that. I thought we could have got some explanation because, if you haven't been watching, let's say you missed an episode here and there, maybe you've forgotten that Jeff Hardy, is wounded. And because he's walking around fine, but that doesn't mean he can, fight for himself. And I think they could have explained that, made a bigger fuss over that, unless, again, I missed it because I do tend to zone them out once in a while. Before we get to the rest of the show, I want to give you guys a quick heads up. We're going to plug for ProWrestling.net. Of course, that is the site that provides you with this free audio show. And today on the site, a couple of different audio shows already. The .NET Weekly Audio Show with Jake Barnett and I getting together to discuss all the news of the week. We give you our take on the Sting situation. We talk about the unprotected chair shot still being allowed by Ring of Honor. What Okada had to say, the Japanese star, about not going to WWE and instead opting to stay with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Do we think he's being sincere? Is it a little bit political? All the news of the week, Kane returning, a little bit on TNA Bound for Glory as well. So a ton of stuff going on today in .NET Weekly. And then also, Jake got together with Will Pruitt for their weekly Pretentious Pro Wrestling podcast. We definitely try to keep things different so it's not like Jake's in there talking about the same thing. So whenever I have Will and Jake on, I do try to make an effort. Sometimes if it's a huge story, then we try to get it all the perspective we can. But in this case, I don't think there was a whole lot of overrun between the two shows. And so there's a couple of hours of audio content available for you guys on the member side of things today. If you're interested in membership, visit the main page of ProWrestling.net. You can't miss the sign-up area. And for as little as $5.50 a month, if you take our annual option, that's what it breaks down to, you can have access to the ad-free version of the website. You can enjoy all of our audio content. If you like what you hear on the all-access side, know that there's a ton more on the member side, including those shows that I mentioned, my Raw audio review, my Q&A show, Sunday's Night of Champions audio review that Jake Barnett and I got together to do, and a lot more. Definitely check that out. $5.50 is what it breaks down to for the annual. If you just want to try it out for 1 month, $7.50 is the price tag. Again, check it out on the main page at ProWrestling.net. Now, after the commercial break on Impact, we got EC3 saying he was going to call out Jeff Hardy and fire him later in the show. We had James Storm deliver an in-ring promo while Abyss and Mannix stood by, and Storm said that without him, a lot of people would still be lost, and he still insists on calling Mahabali Shera by the Koya name that he gave him. And eventually, Abyss told Storm to shut up, and he referred to himself as a TNA original. All right, and he said that he helped build the company from the ground up, and he said that he made himself, Storm didn't. And he said he'd kick Storm's ass if he ever put his hands on him again. He said he'll destroy whoever he wants and is done with the revolution. So he leaves. And then it's Storm's left to try to bully Mannix a little bit. And Mannix said that Storm kept bringing up Koya. And Mannix said his name is Mahabali Shera. And Storm shoved him down and told him to say the name right. Well, Mannix didn't budge. And Mannix said Storm didn't make him or Shera. And then Mannix finally removed that god-awful mask that he's been wearing. I hate that thing. There was a pretty tame TJP chant for people who remember that he's TJ Perkins and he used to go by TJP. He's a good-looking guy. I never understood why they put him in such a bad mask. I would say it's like one of the worst masks I've seen since like poor Justin Credible had to wear the Aldo Montoya jockstrap mask. It was pretty brutal. And so I'm happy they got him out of this finally. We'll see what they do with him going forward. I mean, they've had this, I think he was suicide, manic. And it's just like, take the guy out of the mask and see what happens. And finally that's happening. Shearer made his entrance and said he would fight Storm on the spot. Storm was going to, but then he said, we fight on my terms, and he left. So the job squad, that is the Revolution, finally broken up. And I think the idea was that Storm was going to prop these guys up. And in some ways, it felt like they kind of dragged Storm down. Even though, again, I do think that there's some potential there with TJ Perkins now that he's out of the Manic outfit. And Abyss is just kind of Abyss at this point. Cher is a guy that I don't see much with, but people seem to like the dance. I don't get it. It's the dumbest dance I've ever seen. And not like the, you know, the Bushwhackers thing was silly back in the day, but you can see where the fun was with this. This is just crossing your arms and lifting a finger. And there they are in the impact zone, the fans doing it. And it's not like just, you know, one or two, like, oh, they're planting someone. No, there's people doing this stupid thing. So it's not for me, but hey, if it works, it works. But God, is he terrible in the ring. My God. So we're going to get Storm against Cher, I would assume, coming up soon. Then we went backstage where Galloway was thanking the Wolves for their efforts, and then they all talked about how they're not teammates tonight, they're opponents. And then we went to a commercial break, and we did get Matthews hyping that Tigre Uno would defend his X-Division title in an Ultimate X match against three other men at Bound for Glory. And the three other men is just based on the graphic they showed, there being three open slots, so we'll find out. I'm guessing it's the usual suspects that always work these X-Division train wreck style matches. And that's another thing, you know, with Tigre Uno, I mentioned earlier, I'd give him a lengthier title rant. I would keep him out of all these multi-person train wreck matches, establish that this guy's a good wrestler. He's not just a guy who can go out there and take part in these spot fests, and, you know, let him shine as a wrestler. And I think that's going to be more successful than the Terror of Doom. And I like a good Ultimate X match too, but I like it when they mean something, and announcing it 2 weeks before Bound for Glory, or a week and a half if you think about it, and not having the other opponents said, it's kind of hard to get excited about this. It's just, you know, the X Division is so weak right now. Backstage, it doesn't mean it won't be a good match. Could be entertaining, but as far as, like, the personalities, it's just hard to get to care right now about the X Division. Matt Hardy was showing his concern for his brother potentially being fired because he has a family to feed. I'm like, oh my God, would you guys stop? They're taking all the worst parts of the Big Show angle with the Authority, where Big Show is whining, you know, oh my God, his family. This guy has to feed his family. It's like, how much money did he make over the year? It just wasn't, nobody believed it. I think WWE tried to cover it and say he lost money somehow, some way. No, nobody really bought it. And I don't think anyone thinks that Jeff Hardy needs to feed his family, or needs to worry about feeding his family, I should say, because of financial ruin. And they're not even, like, saying that. They're just, it's like, he has a family to feed. He needs a job. I think Jeff's made a lot of money over the years, and they are really lucky that when they say this, and they've done this in the ring, too, and I think they do it later in the show, they're lucky, like, the crowd doesn't respond with WWE chants. I mean, seriously, it's like, oh, if he gets fired, that's TNA is the only place he can work. Come on. We got ring entrances for that elimination match, and it was Drew Galloway defeating Lashley, Davey Richards, Eddie Edwards, and Bram in an elimination match. Bram was out first. I would have been really pissed off about the way that what they've done with Bram since, you know, coming out of last week's show, if it weren't for the fact that he's, you know, got all these legal issues now. And so I don't know if they did more with him, that they taped things that they just opted not to air, maybe a promo where he explained why he joined Team TNA, because this is a guy who'd been completely out for himself. You know, I mean, he turned on his best buddy Magnus and was tormenting Magnus's wife and just beats the hell out of people. And suddenly he's the nice guy standing up for Team TNA. So maybe there was more, if not, strange. But he was also the first guy eliminated here in this match. And I'm like, oh, God. But again, given the circumstances, it worked out. They didn't know it at the time, but it worked out. Then, even stranger, the Wolves have Lashley and Galloway locked into submission holds. And it's like, cool. You weren't really thinking this is going to happen, that they're going to win. But they look like complete idiots. It wasn't like those guys broke the hold, reached the ropes, or anything. they decide to release the hold so they can go at one another. Like, what? And Josh Matthews, I felt only slightly worse for him when he had to plug like Alaskan Monsters or whatever awful show that Destination America has on, other than Impact. He has to do that during the show. But in this case, he had to sit there and try to explain that they wanted to go at it against one another. And it's like, well, just wait and hold your submission holds, and then you can be going at one another for the championship. It didn't make any damn sense. It just was, the broadcast team seemed confused. I mean, they're trying to cover it. Someone has to cover it. But then it didn't take long before Lashley speared Richards and Galloway hit the Future Shock on Edwards, and they were both simultaneously eliminated. So they looked like idiots. It was like they're trying to do this good sportsman thing, like, all right, let's just go at it at the expense of eliminating their opponents. And then they get eliminated in, you know, record time after that. Really bad. The Wolves looked like absolute imbeciles here. I didn't like that part of it at all. The match ended up coming down to Lashley and Galloway, of course. And it was Lashley had control, went for a spear. Galloway dodges it and then rolls him up for a two count. Galloway comes right back with a running boot to the head and pin Lashley clean. So Lashley loses, and then afterward, he's respectful. He goes over to Galloway, shakes his hand, and raises his arm. And so Galloway will get the TNA title shot at Bound for Glory. A little bit odd that it's not a Hardy because they're in Hardy country. I thought this would have been a spot to save Jeff or Matt for. I mean, they knew going into these tapings that, or I assume they knew, that Jeff wasn't going to be ready to actually work a match. So, but they'd already given away so many Matt Hardy against EC3 matches that I'm guessing they felt like they had to do something different. But so it will be Drew Galloway, who they have given a nice push to throughout this Team TNA versus Global Force thing. You know, he's cut these all-out babyface promos, and the crowds are usually receptive. I just don't know that to an audience in North Carolina. You know, I'm sure some of them are watching Impact. I'm guessing many of them will go to see the Hardys, and the Hardys aren't really featured prominently. At least, Matt, I know what both guys are doing on the show, and we'll get to that in a little bit, just to avoid spoilers, because neither one has been officially announced and won't be until next week. We went backstage where EC3 said he was going to go to the ring to fire Hardy, and then they went to a commercial break. When they came back from that, we ended up backstage first with Galloway praising his opponents and saying there's a reason they were on TNA, and it's because they're the best. And he talked about spoke about how he is 100% real, and said when he wins the TNA title, it would be for everyone who has a dream. So he really lays it on thick with this babyface stuff, and I don't mind that. I think it's a little sappy, it's a little too babyface for some, sure, but so is John Cena, and seems to work for him. Galloway is doing fine. EC3 and Tyrus then were in the ring, and EC3 said he's not a villain. He's the TNA champion, and he gave Hardy one more chance to come to the ring and beg for his job. So Jeff makes his entrance, and then EC3 once again stated that Hardy is a personal assistant and therefore does not get entrance music, so he made him turn the entrance music off again. And Matthews asked the fans what they would do if they were in a similar situation, and he says Hardy has a wife and child at home. And I'm like, yeah, and I assume a lot of money in the bank, too, and the ability to go elsewhere should he be fired. It just doesn't work. You know, it's like, oh, come on. I think everyone at home is just rolling their eyes going, yeah, he needs the money. EC3 asked Hardy if he had anything to say for himself, and Jeff starts talking about the creatures, and they live to create, and they don't live in his reality. And he told EC3 to fire him because he's not afraid. But what about his wife and child? EC3 said that if he fired him, Hardy wouldn't have any way to support his family. And this is where I was like, there should be a WWE chant right here. EC3 told him to get on his knees and beg for his position and kiss the TNA championship. Hardy did get on his knees. And then he said EC3 can't fire him because he quits. You can take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. He didn't sing it like Johnny Paycheck, but thank you to Johnny Paycheck for the inspiration. EC3 said Hardy can't quit because he's fired. And then he said the show is over. And it kind of was, but they went to a video hyping EC3 against Drew Galloway, having a special referee for Bound for Glory. Gee, I wonder who that would be. and then hyped EC3 and Tyrus versus Drew Galloway and Matt Hardy for next week. So I like this edition of Impact. Yeah, the Hardy thing irritates me. And as far as Bound for Glory is concerned, I guess if you haven't figured it out, spoiler warning, you've been warned. I'm going to get into the special referee. Obviously, it's Jeff Hardy. So you'll get that payoff next week. It was a strange way to end the show, though, I got to say. It was like, there's no babyface comeuppance here whatsoever. And I guess the idea is you tune in next week for it. I think I would have gone with Drew Galloway winning the way he did, and that would have been the way I went off the air rather than Hardy and EC3. But it worked. It was still a good overall show. They're setting things up quickly and nicely for the Bound for Glory event. Only one more week to go and lots of matches to announce. So next week should be interesting. Hopefully the show quality stays like this one because I did enjoy it. That's going to do it for now. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting ProWrestling.net. Again, check out the sign-up page for more details on signing up to become a member of the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net. Hear all that audio content I mentioned and more. Until next time, take care.